Nearly 3 years after a limousine crash in Schoharie County claimed the lives of 20 people, the tragedy is back in the news, with a criminal case coming to a close and a separate probe to determine culpability underway. To update us on the latest developments, we're joined once again by Larry Rulison, a reporter with the Times Union. Welcome back to the show, Larry.
Oh, thanks, Dave. I appreciate it.
So you reported this week that the State Inspector General's office is reviewing the state oversight of Prestige Limousine, the company that rented out the limo that crashed in Schoharie County when its brakes failed on a steep road. What do you know about what agencies they're going to be looking into? And do you have any sense of how long this has been underway for?
I know that the IG's investigation is supposed to look into the Department of Transportation and DMV and how they handled the limo company, Prestige Limousine, that was involved in the crash, sort of, you know, before the crash happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the stuff that happened afterwards as prosecutors brought the case against Alwan Hussein. I haven't been told their exact scope or how long they've been doing this investigation, but they were asked by Senator Jim Tedisco back in April to open a probe into the DOT and DMV and their oversight of Prestige, and also look at any steps and why the state police, their role in the investigation of Nauman Hussein and allegations that they blocked access from federal safety investigators to look at the limo and other evidence. So I'm assuming that they're going on what Jim Tedisco asked for as a template. As far as like how much of that they actually decide to go with, I don't know that at all. I did a Freedom of Information request, and they gave me just one letter responding to Jim Tedisco. They said the rest of the documents I requested are exempt from FOIL because of their ongoing investigation.
So was it your records request that brought the fact that an investigation is ongoing to light?
It sort of did. I mean, I confirmed it with a named source after my records request, because the records request itself, the denial, it did show me that there's a case file number assigned to the case.
Mm-hmm.
And then the FOIL, the way the agency, the IG's office, their record access officer responded to me, they said, here's the reasons why we're not going to provide you any of the other documents, basically because we're in the middle of an investigation. But that is the first time that IG has basically confirmed that they're undergoing this investigation.
In the wake of the October 2018 crash, you reported extensively on the oversight or lack of oversight by the State Department of Transportation and the State Department of Motor Vehicle as it pertains to Prestige Limousine and this limo in particular. What have you uncovered throughout your reporting that suggests or outright indicates maybe malfeasance or negligence by state employees that the Inspector General's office might be looking at?
Well, the easy one is as it relates to the DMV. Early on, I was able to get the inspection records from the DMV. I didn't get them from the DMV, but I got them another way, but that showed where Nauman Hussein got inspection stickers after he bought the limo in 2016. He went to this truck stop up in Wilton and then to Mavis. And like in between then, he just let his inspection lapse. So for a while, that limo, the Excursion, was driving around with an expired inspection sticker. But under state law, a stretch limousine is not allowed to be inspected at a DMV inspection station. And they don't get DMV inspection stickers like you get on your car. They get these special diamond inspection stickers every 6 months. And they can only get it from the DOT at like a DOT garage. So that was one of the earliest things that I was able to find out with issues with the DMV. And one of the other reasons that compounded that was that Nauman Hussein was able to basically trick the DMV by saying when he registered the limo after he bought it, that it was an 8-passenger vehicle, which an excursion that you buy off the Ford factory floor might be an 8-person vehicle, but the one that he owned was super stretch, 34-foot stretch excursion that sat 21 people. So that was it. And then the as far as the DOT, I think the biggest thing about the DOT was that they didn't communicate with DMV, so they didn't know at a lot of times what was going on with these vehicles being registered incorrectly like this one. And they also had so many opportunities to like take the plates off the excursion or impound it after it was found to be unsafe, that and they were allowed to do that under the law at the time. And by not doing that, that was the other big thing that we found, was that the DOT maybe just should have forced their rules a little harder.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about the latest developments in the aftermath of the 2018 limousine crash that resulted in 20 deaths, and our guest is Times Union reporter Larry Rulison. When you think about the shortcomings of the oversight by the state, whether at the DMV or the DOT, does it seem to you like these are examples of individual failings or people who were failing because the rules and procedures in the institution itself were lacking?
I would blame anyone personally, especially at the DMV. That just was a system that was not working. There were so many loopholes you could get around. In terms of the DOT, I mean, the first investigator who came on, you know, sort of put Nauman Hussein on his radar, he it was a little bit of sleuthing where he was driving home probably one day, or he noticed the excursion parked at the Mavis shop in Saratoga.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, he sort of figured out what was going on and that was a problem. Now, he's an investigator, not like an inspector or mechanical expert, but still he did get on to the scene very quickly in terms of uncovering what Nauman Hussein was doing. But his collective actions with the DOT, which involved many people, including his supervisors, sort of checking in on Hussein and trying to get him to pay his fines and get his limo fixed. I think what I've been told is there was something within the DOT that said, you know, that they weren't supposed to crack down on a business and shut it down unless it was like really, really important that something like that happened. They weren't really heavy-handed when it came to like shutting someone down, someone's livelihood, taking away their livelihood. In this case, I don't know why they ever would have done that. And so to me, it was a bigger institutional thing. In both cases, I'd say I haven't seen anyone who's been negligent, like, you know, on purpose.
So the other big development in this saga was the plea deal struck in the criminal case of Nauman Hussein, who you mentioned earlier. Can you explain who he is and how his criminal case got resolved?
Yeah, well, Nauman Hussein, he's 31 years old. I actually don't know where he lives right now, but he and his father, Shahid Hussein, was owned this motel up in Wilton, and the son sort of helped them with that business and the limo business. Nauman's got a older brother, Harris. And, of course, Shahid Hussein, we all know, was working as an FBI informant over the years. But and so at some point in 2018, his dad left for Pakistan, where he's originally from. And Nauman, was in charge of the limo business. I think he'd probably run it also before his dad left, but probably this is the first time he's doing it completely on his own without any supervision. But otherwise, beyond that, I don't really know how he earns his money. He owns some houses along with his brother, like rental houses around the capital region, and the motel was shut down in 2019. So he and his brother played like professional paintball, but I honestly don't know where he gets his money. But anyway, he was supposed to go on trial for manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide, 20 counts each for all 20 of the deaths in the limo crash. And at the end of the day, I guess the prosecution's case against him became so shaky that he ended up being able to get a no-jail plea deal. He's going to serve 5 years probation and do 1,000 hours community service. So, I mean, it shocked a lot of people.
How was the decision of this plea received by family members of the victims in this crash?
Yeah, I think they're very upset. I know, though, that they're very upset to have to sit through the trial, because especially the autopsies from that crash were particularly gruesome. And, you know, the families talked about it at the court hearing when Hussein accepted his plea deal, that, you know, they would ask their doctors to read the autopsies before they read them themselves. And the doctors wouldn't even repeat some of the passages to their patients, the family members, because they were like, I just don't want to say what this says. It was pretty bad. The injuries the victims sustained were really, really bad. So I think there was this feeling that they wanted the case over. The COVID-19 pandemic had extended the timeline for the trial so long. They were just so sick of it. It was so tough. They wanted him to go to jail. Some people said they wanted him to, like, spend his whole life in prison. But they also realized that they might lose at trial and he might go free. And they were very wary of the emotional toll the trial would take on them.
What does the plea deal from Nauman mean for any potential or existing civil actions against him or his business?
The civil cases will, I think, only be helped by this. I guess the prosecutors and the families sort of realize that if, say, today Nauman were asked to testify in a civil trial, he could just invoke his Fifth Amendment right to not incriminate himself. But by doing the plea deal, he's now free because he won't be charged with anything else, to go and speak at those civil trials. I don't know of any major assets he has, but the Mavis Discount Tire Store is a defendant, and they're owned by a huge hedge fund. So they have a lot of assets. And Nauman Hussein actually might benefit the families that way, because things he might say might really indict Mavis, and the way the things Mavis did when they serviced his car and put an inspection sticker on his car. So in some ways, this frees up him to speak more freely at trial, and it might help the families actually get more compensation down the road.
You've been covering this issue so long that back when you started, you and I were colleagues at the Times Union.
Yeah.
What's it been like for you on a personal level? Is this emotionally draining in any way, shape, or form? Or are you able to remain detached to some degree, keep that, you know, journalistic objectivity that keeps you at arm's length?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I thought I was really detached, at the hearing when the families testified at the plea hearing last week, their testimony was, I told someone, it just shattered me. I mean, I was sobbing the whole time. I've never done that as a reporter in public. And I'm sure half the room was also crying. And it was just so, it was very tough. That took a lot out of me and made me go, God, I don't even know what I'm doing here. These families are just so crushed, and the effect that crash had on, they not only lost, you know, 20 of their family members, but they testified that they're all there, you know, all those people had, you know, brothers, sisters, friends that are also just emotionally, you know, scarred, and a lot of physical ailments, people dropping out of school, Those families are still hurting so much. And honestly, I didn't realize how bad it was for them through most of my reporting. And I think because I was probably too detached. But it's been tough lately. I just try to sometimes you just have to take a break from it. But I've been very driven to keep the story alive. I mean, mostly for the victims and their families, you know, and the public. But, you know, when I realize how the families, what the hell they've gone through, it doesn't even compare to anything else I've ever experienced.
Well, we've been speaking with Larry Rollison. He's a reporter with the Times Union. Larry, thank you so much for making the time and, you know, keep up the great work on this issue.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.